Soda, he said. It's too cold.
But it's a good school.
Oh, yes, a good school. He sighed. A fine school. She felt sorry for him, and then suppressed the emotion. He had brought it on himself, and against her advice. For the last 24 hours, she had not allowed herself to say, "I told you so," to anyone. She had not allowed herself to think it. For one thing, it wasn't necessary to say it. For another, it would not be useful in helping Benson, which was her chief concern. But she didn't have much sympathy now for the brave surgeon. Brave surgeons risked other people's lives, not their own. The most a surgeon could lose was his reputation. "Well," he said, "I better get back to the NPS, see how things are going. You know what?"
"What?"
"I hope they kill him," Ellis said. And he walked away toward the elevators. The operation began at 7 p.m. She watched from the overhead glass viewing booth as Morris was wheeled into the OR and the surgeons draped him. Ben Dixon and Curtis were doing the procedure. They were both good plastic surgeons. They would fix him up as well as anybody possibly could. But it was still a shock to watch as the sterile gauze packs were taken away from Morris's face and the flesh exposed. The upper part of his face was normal, though pale. The lower part was a red mash, like butcher's meat. It was impossible to find the mouth in all the redness. Ellis had seen that in the emergency ward. It was shocking to her now, even at a distance. She could imagine the effect much closer. She stayed to watch as the drapes were placed over the body and around the head. The surgeons were gowned and gloved, the instrument tables set in position, the scrub nurses stood ready. The whole ritual of preparing for surgery was carried out smoothly and efficiently. It was a wonderful ritual, she thought, so rigid and so perfect that nobody would ever know, and the surgeons themselves probably didn't consider, that they were operating on a colleague. The ritual, the fixed procedure, was anesthetic for the surgeon, just as gas was anesthetic for the patient. She stayed a few moments longer, and then left the room. Chapter 14. As she approached the NPS, she saw that a cluster of reporters had cornered Ellis outside the building. He was answering their questions in clear, bad humor. She heard the words, "mind control," repeated several times. Feeling slightly guilty, she cut around to the far entrance and took the elevator to the fourth floor. Mind control, she thought. The Sunday supplements were going to have a field day with mind control. And then there would be solemn editorials in the daily papers, and even more solemn editorials in the medical journals, about the hazards of uncontrolled and irresponsible research. She could see it coming. Mind control. Christ. The truth was that everybody's mind was controlled, and everybody was glad for it. The most powerful mind controllers in the world were parents, and they did the most damage. Theorists usually forgot that nobody was born prejudiced, neurotic, or hung up. Those traits required a helping hand. Of course, parents